I've made all of these mistakes and more, and you will too. Back in a moment with the top 13 mistakes new directors make.
Strike up the band, so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
I'm actually going to do these in reverse, and I'll start with number 13 and go to what I think is the number one mistake that directors make, but the rest of them aren't in any particular order. Number 13, not planning enough. You need to plan, have a calendar, whatever works for you. For me, I need a visual calendar showing me a month at a time, and I plan the year out. The older I've gotten and the longer I've taught, the further out that I plan. I'm getting ready. This is the start of 2020, and I'm getting ready to print out a 2021 calendar so that I can start planning for that. I got to the point when I was teaching marching band that I planned at least a year out, sometimes slightly more than a year. And I was always the one asking for the next school year calendar because everything was kind of based around that. Even if I could just get what the start date of school was, because sometimes they didn't know exactly which dates would fall when, which days would be professional development, etc. But they sometimes knew what the start date would be, and that was always very helpful to me. Number 12, not using a metronome. Even just recently, I had to be reminded of this. I was clapping a lot, I was clicking some sticks, and I tend to go to the rhythm that the students do. And I'm in my second year of a new school for me. First year doing band with them. Last year I just did orchestra, and this year I'm doing band and orchestra. And for some reason, these students are having a hard time starting their note. And so I actually started putting into my lesson plans at the top of my lesson plan in bold letters, metronome, metronome, to remind me to use the metronome with them. And there are times we've spent 20 minutes on our first scale that we were working on because they could not enter together. And we tried breathing and tried different strategies to try to get them to do that. So go to the metronome earlier than later. I mean, at some point you want to start weaning yourself off of that, but when, especially early on, or when, just do a little bit every day. Don't spend a whole class period with the metronome droning in. I tell the students I hate it as much as they do, but I tell them that it's a tool that shows us where we're wrong and helps us to be better musicians, and they seem to understand that. Number 11, lack of classroom management. This could be a whole 5 episodes just on its own, but study classroom management. Become a student of it. If something is not working and you keep doing the same thing, then that's the definition of insanity. So find something else to do. Look into what your colleagues are doing. Have someone come and observe. This is where I've often done best. I was fortunate to have a college director who was very honest all the time. And when he would come and observe, he'd say, "You know, your rehearsal discipline just isn't there." And he wasn't trying to hurt my feelings. He and I had a good relationship, and it really helped to take my teaching to the next level. This was probably 7 or 8 years ago. Number 10, being either too rigid or too lax. I think there's a balance somewhere in the middle where you can have some fun with making music, you can have some fun with the students, but there's a level of professionalism also. Too lax, you're not going to get anything done in the rehearsal. Too rigid, it feels like being in the military and students will want to quit. So I know that I've seen some people who believe in a totally silent rehearsal the entire time. And I think especially for middle school, that's a little bit hard to do. So in my rehearsal, we have times where it's really strict. Then we have times where it's a little bit more relaxing. one of the programs we use at my school is called Capturing Kids' Hearts. And part of that is the kids share good things that are happening in their lives. You take about 3 minutes out of class time. So we do that after about a 20-minute warm-up period. We take that break and do the good things. And so that's a little bit more relaxing of time. And then we focus back and we start working on our repertoire. And they know that there's times to be more rigid and times a little bit more lax in the entire rehearsal. Number 9, bringing work home. When you leave school, you need to have a life outside of school. Do something different besides teaching. I even gave up teaching lessons, even though I could make really good money teaching lessons. It felt like a continuation of my school day. Now, I perform quite a bit now, and I enjoy that, but to me, that feels more like it's a hobby. It's something that I do that's totally different than what I do at school. I also, in this position I'm in now, my second year here, I did not put email on my phone. So right now, as I record this, we're on Christmas break. My emails are piling up at work, and I'm fine with that. We have a teacher work day on the first day back, and I'll get caught up on the emails. I just put a vacation responder. So I highly recommend taking email off your phone. I can't tell you the number of times I just thought to myself, oh, I'll check email before I go to bed, and there was an angry email from a parent, and then I couldn't sleep that night. So it was hurting me physically and emotionally. There had been no complaints and nothing that couldn't be handled when I've gotten back to work now that I no longer do that. Number 8, taking student behavior or poor behavior or quitting personally. Now, I'll be honest, I'm in my 22nd year of teaching, and I still struggle with this, but I'm getting better at it. I'm developing a harder shell to where I'm not too bothered by it, because what I've discovered is that almost every single time when a student has quit, it's made the group better. It might not seem like it at first, but there's kind of like a negative attitude that the student who doesn't want to be there brings. I personally try to do everything I can to keep the student, but if they decide they're going, I just let them go and then I don't talk about it anymore. Number 7, replying to an angry parent without thinking. It's so easy to hit reply and then our emotions just pour out on the page. That's what makes you a good band teacher, is having good emotions, having a stronger sense of emotions than the general population. But we have to be careful to keep that in check. A lot of times what you can do is run it by a colleague. I sometimes run emails by my choir colleague, and I'll say, how does this response sound? And she can help me tweak it a little bit and make it sound better. Sometimes just waiting 12 hours. In fact, I've gotten to the point, not so much with replying to emails, but even deciding what a punishment will be for student discipline. I'll leave school and make a note to myself that that's the first thing I'm going to think about when I get there the next day. And I just give myself 12 to 14 hours to kind of sleep on it and think about it. And sometimes I calm down and realize that a gentler, more forgiving approach is going to work better than the harsh approach initially that I was thinking of. Number 6, not knowing when to shut up. And there are so many times when this happens. When you're on the podium, if you talk too much. I used to record my rehearsals when I was a new teacher, and there were times when I was talking for half the time. No, 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 don't do that. Whatever you can tell them with the baton, do it. You can actually train your students. So you just cut and you say, nope, watch. And then you do it again. And so they're playing and watching. You're forcing them to watch instead of telling them what it is that you're trying to get them to do. So whenever possible, know when to shut up for that. Sometimes it's knowing when to shut up when we're dealing with a parent. Sometimes we just need to listen. I was in charge of Solon Ensemble Festival. It was hosted at my school for about 7 years. And it was a really weird situation. We were in a new building, but for some reason it was not showing up on Google Maps, and the we were in a new building, but we took the old name with us, and the old building became the middle school. So there were still a lot of GPS systems that would send people to the old school, which was about a 15-minute drive away from the new school. And parents would show up at the Soul and Ensemble Festival, and they were late, they were mad, they wanted to know who was in charge, and some of them would yell at me because the GPS took them to the wrong school. It's like, I have no control over that. I can't control the GPS. And I learned to just listen to them and learned that what they were really worried about was that their child would still get to perform. So when I would have that situation, I'd say, oh, I'm so sorry that this has happened. Have your student go down there to the warm-up area. We're going to fit them into the schedule. So when I learned to shut up about that and just listen to what the real issue was, then the parents calmed down, because really their concern was, will my child get to perform even though we're 15 minutes past the performance time? Know when to shut up also with your principal. Sometimes if your principal is trying to give you feedback, we want to get defensive and want to jump in and say something really quick. A lot of times, in my experience, principals don't know exactly what we do. So think of it as you're training your principal. Number 5, trying to be someone else. Every program is different. Be yourself and try and just take it from where it's at and take it to the next level. I once had a retired director of a very respectable program came into my program, and I was in my first or second year of rebuilding. And they were nowhere near where his band had been. He came in for a 90-minute clinic and spent 90 minutes on the first two measures of the song. Most of the students didn't even get to play. And I understand what he was doing. He was approaching it as if my band were like his band, instead of deciding, you know, here's where James's band is right now, and I'm just going to work on some other bigger picture things. He was really trying to pick on those first two measures. So I learned from that. I'm not going to try to be like someone else. I'm going to take the program where it's at and take it to the next level. Number 4, relating the number of hours that you spend at school to success. There is very little correlation. Now, you can't be lazy and leave at noon and take long lunches and not plan and not respond to emails and think you're going to be successful, because you're not. But you have to know that there's a point where you need to shut your computer, leave the school, and go home and do something different. This is related to number 9, bringing work home. There was a time when I used to teach at a school that was about 30 minutes from my house, and my son came with me to that school, to that high school. He was in wrestling. School ended at about 3, and wrestling practice ended about 6:30. So I thought to myself, I'm really going to get a lot done, because I waited there till his wrestling practice was done. There came a point where my brain just wasn't functioning. I was staring at the screen, and nothing was working in my brain. Yes, I did get a lot done, but there comes a point where you have diminishing return. Number 3, over-programming. It's better to do some easy songs that the students can do well and then build to the harder songs. Throw some harder songs in there than to try to do every song that you thought was cool in college when you're working at an inner city middle school, for example. Number 2, underestimating the importance of relationships with everyone. So this includes your non-music colleagues, your music colleagues, your arts colleagues, parents, the secretary. Be nice to the secretary, because they're the ones who submit the check requests. They're the ones who might pay you for extra hours. They're the ones who know where everything at the school is. The janitor, it's such an unappreciated job. You know, they're dealing with graffiti in the boys' bathroom every day, doing the same thing every day. So if you can do something to help their jobs, then they're going to appreciate that. And the number one mistake that I think young directors make is letting their ego get in the way of teaching music. It's all about what is best for the kids. That's always been my guide to what I do. What is best for the kids, not what is best for our ego. And sometimes we leave a position even. We do some things based on something that will build up our ego and not what is best for the students. I hope that this discussion of the top 13 mistakes new directors make has helped you. If you are looking for a speaker for professional development in your district, please think about me and get in touch with me.
The Music and Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band teacher.